Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
So, I've got this guy. He's an Egyptian actor, writer, comedian, director. And his claim to fame is he was in the movie The American Sniper, or American Sniper, with Bradley Cooper, which is Oscar-nominated, and Clint Eastwood directed it. He's going to tell you all about working with Clint Eastwood, which he said was just amazing. Clint Eastwood's an actor's director. He just lets you go and have fun. And if he doesn't like it, he'll tell you what's up. And he's also doing stand-up comedy now. Yeah, everybody wants to be a comedian, including this guy. His name is Ayman Saman. Ayman Saman. I hate to say it wrong, but I think I just did. He's a really great guy. He is almost like the founding father of black metal rock and roll music in Egypt. He was in the 90s, he wanted to be in a rock and roll band. And he and his little Egyptian friends, you know, as I call them, you know, genies, whatever, they got together and they put together a band, and all of a sudden they moved to fucking Chicago to be rock and roll stars, and now he makes a living as an actor. But he started the black metal in Egypt. That's like an amazing story in itself. You're also going to learn about his history, about his upbringing, who he looked up to. He grew up in Cairo, and his family didn't have a lot of money, even though his father was a lawyer and his mother worked at Human Resources. So there's a lot to go with this guy, and you're really going to enjoy it, because we still are enjoying it. Brooklyn Buddha. So, you know, I always say, I feel like Conan O'Brien was like, we have a great show. You know, he would always say a great show. But I'm always excited to have my guests. I only will bring you on my show if I respect you, or I like you, or I owe you money. You know, that's the only reason I'll bring you on the show. Like, it's like some people are like, oh, you want to have hey, you want to put this guy on? I'm like, I don't know this guy. I don't really know that guy. Oh, no, I got this guy. He's an actor. He lives in my building. Well, what's he been at? Well, he does extra work. No, I don't want that guy who's doing extra work. I want a guy who's in, you know, he's grinding. He's out there. He's doing his thing. And this guy, he was in the movie, the fucking nominated Oscar movie, American Sniper.
Probably the most talked about movie of the year.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And he's Egyptian. As fucking crazy as that is, we just had comedian Nasri Malak on. And I just said, I don't really know many fucking Egyptian comedians. And then this guy.
They're multiplying.
Yeah.
They're on this show.
They're coming. They're like fucking pyramids. They're coming together, fucking one on top of each other. Look at Woody shake his head. Oh, no, he went there. Just give me an SMH and fucking not say it. Shaking my head. So anyways, Chad is filling in for Tim Humeu.
Hey, guys.
Chaddy-o.
Yeah, Chaddy-o. Yep. You can go to ChadShapiro.com.
Yeah, pay someone like $5 to say that now, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Chad Shapiro, yeah. And then we got Woody, the fucking the new producer, kicking ass, loving Woody. He's doing his thing. If you guys can see Woody's hair, it's fucking like Curly Sue. It is
a young Shirley Temple.
A young Shirley
Temple.
Perfect. That gets him laid a lot. He tells girls online he's a young Shirley Temple. They're like, let me suck your dick.
Like, he's a great dancer, too.
Yeah.
Very smooth.
little tap, little soft shoe. Good ship lollipop, you know.
Is it good chip or good ship?
I think it's good ship.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
That's like your fucking little your joke. The lollipop guild.
But I used to say kids.
We used to think it was the lollipop kids. But it's the lollipop guild.
It's the guild, yeah.
It's the lollipop kids. They're grown men.
Yeah. They're unionized and they're in a guild, but I was saying kids.
Or the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
So anyways, without further ado, this guy is an actor. He's a writer. He's a stand-up comedian for almost 2 years now. And he's pretty funny. I've watched some of his tapes. And he's also going to be directing a short film. And his name is Ayman Saman. And I think he's a great guy. I actually, just to let you know, right before I bring him in, I was casting, helping my big brother Eddie Velez, actor. He was directing this movie, Target Jeremy. And we didn't know anything about The American Sniper. We didn't know that Ayman was in this movie. But he was right for this part, so we wanted to cast him. And then I talked with him, and then I knew some other actors that knew him, and they're like, yeah, he's really great, great. And then at the last second, he couldn't do the movie. But we're going to work together with him on some other stuff. But without further ado, Ayman, what's up, buddy?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. So you owe me money, right?
Yeah, that's right. I owe you. I'll pay you an Egyptian coin. Chocolate fucking Egyptian coins. So where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Cairo, Egypt. I was born and raised there. I went to college there. I was a tour guide in Egypt. I did tours between Egypt, Jordan, and Israel.
Like for the pyramids
yeah,
or something?
Yeah.
Oh, how fucking... So you, like, know everything about it?
I know, yeah. I mean, I know a lot about it, but for the most part, nobody knows anything about it.
Right.
So
you just bullshit your way?
For the most part. That's what tour guides do, man.
Well, yeah, this is a pyramid and... named after the Pyraminx,
yeah,
and the Rubik's Cube. and they're like, oh yeah.
it's all interpretations, you know. It's all.
Is there a big lie that you ever said that you're like, I hope no one catches me, and it like gets a laugh or something?
Well, there was one time I was called in. I was last minute. A friend of mine, who was a tour guide. He was supposed to do that tour, and he got sick. And they called me in to fill in for him, and I've never done that place before. It was a monastery in Sinai, and so I didn't know shit about it. And you know, we studied it in school, but I was high, whatever, you know, so I didn't remember anything. And so we went there. I was like, well, I'll just, you know, bullshit my way through the monastery. And so we're there, and we're walking through, and I have the tour group, and I'm like explaining, making bullshit about all these Christian iconic paintings. And I'm like, yeah, and as you see here, this is the Virgin Mary, and it was a gift to the monastery from so-and-so, and somebody's like, oh, but the label underneath that, it says that it's Saint whatever. I'm like, oh, you know what? There's been renovation in the monastery. Shifted paintings, so it is the Virgin Mary and whatever, you know. So I almost got called. One of the monks was passing by at that moment, like specific, and he like looked at
He's
me
like,
and like
whoop?
Shook his head. Yeah, so that was a tour guide bullshit moment.
Oh, that's funny. So when you moved to L.A., did you become like a tour guide here for like the
TMZ.
Hollywood stars, TMZ, all that shit?
No, I actually moved to Chicago initially, and I worked in a travel company in Chicago for a few years. Because I was a musician. I originally played heavy metal.
Oh, wow.
In Egypt, and that's what I did when I moved to the States.
What was the name of your band?
In Egypt, my last band was called The Phobia.
Phobia.
It was heavy metal, like black metal.
Did you have the hair back then? Because you're very clean cut now,
yeah,
so I'll just...
You had the long hair?
Yeah, I had the long hair until I did the military service, which is mandatory over there, so I had to have it shaved. So
is
after...
black metal popular?
No.
In Egypt?
No.
No.
It wasn't, but
was
we sort of like... we kind of like carved the scene, and but there was a lot of fans that showed up, you know. That first, we did a concert that was attended by like about 5,000 people.
Oh, wow.
Pretty much all the headbangers in Egypt showed up to that. So after the military, I just wore a military beret and a dog tag and a camouflage jacket. That was my stage
right,
persona.
Right. So you moved from Egypt to be a big famous rock star in Chicago.
Yeah, originally that was the hope.
And then it was too fucking cold.
It was too fucking cold. Yes. Yeah, it was too bitter and cold. Chicago's great. The people are great.
Right, I love Chicago.
It's a great scene there, like a lot of creative people, theater, music.
Big theater.
Yeah, big theater town.
Yeah, Gary Sinise, Hurley Burley, right? Yeah. All that. So what's the name of that theater, Hurley?
The Wolf?
Yeah, Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf, yeah.
So did you go around there, like trying to get into those theaters?
I did. Well, I did more like a small, like they call them storefront type theaters. When I started acting, so I did a lot of like independent theater there and short films and independent films and stuff. And then I just wanted to go further with acting, so I decided to move to LA.
Do you know any actors from out there in Chicago that you run into out here? Or?
There's a few, yeah. There's a few that made their way here. And it's interesting. It's the ones that actually, when we were there, are the ones that actually said that they were going to make their way here.
Right.
Are the ones that made it. And the ones that say, well, you know, maybe one day, or like they're like wishy-washy about it or whatever. They're
still, gotta speak it into existence, man.
Still there, yeah.
Is you know, this is really an off question, but I did this movie with this Egyptian actor. It's like fucking all the Egyptian ideas or stories that I can come up with. They're gonna come up today from like the Egyptian day of guests, right?
The Egyptian invasion.
And this guy named Sameh Sabri, he is an Egyptian, great guy, real. He actually has hair like you, but not you, Woody. He has that curly ass fucking your fucking hair
thing,
and he told me a story, and I've never got to ask anybody, so I want to ask you. So, did you ever see like a camel, like just in Egypt, chilling, right?
Well, I mean, they're usually in the tourist areas.
Did you ever see a camel fucking? The reason I'm asking.
Does the hump get in the way of the hump?
What day is it?
I've seen a camo fuck on a Wednesday.
No, yeah, good. No, did you ever see a camel fucking?
No, I haven't.
He told me when he was younger, they would go and watch the camels fucking.
Uh-huh.
Right? And he would like, and he said that.
Like in a camel brothel or?
Yes, I don't know what it was. Yeah, it's funny, but no. And he said that one time the camel caught them looking. Like he was like, you know, fucking doing his thing, and then he looked over and he said that the camel stopped and then fucking slowly walked and then just started running towards them. Like if a camel sees you fuck, they want to kill you. Like it's like almost like this crazy thing. So it's like and I said, dude, I go, is this really true? He's like, dude, because I'm swear to God. Yeah. So he says that they ran back to their house and the camel sat outside for 2 days and he couldn't leave the house. For 2 days the camel wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
They had to like, so then they finally like called the police or something. To get this camel the fuck out of there. So that's why I'm asking the question. He's not a comedian. He just told me a story.
It sounds a little shady to me. I can see the camel running after them. I can understand that, but I don't think the camel would squat for 2 days. And if you call the Egyptian police to tell them that a camel squatting in front of your place, they're going to say, go fuck yourself.
Right. Well, that's good. I mean,
like you call them for a murder, they say, go fuck yourself. So I don't think they're like, going to show up for a camel, you know? Good. So that's the part that is a little sounds a little.
So you've ridden a camel?
I have ridden a camel as part of the job of being a tour guide. Yeah.
Now, so you rode a camel
with
them, like in the back, and you're like, "This is the way."
Yeah, like, yeah, pretty much, just like you see, just like you see in the movies.
So how did you come about? That, you know, it was like we were in Chicago, but I have to go back to this Egypt as a little boy.
Yeah.
I mean, you are, you don't look older. Actually, in the movie, you look older.
In the movie, I do, yeah. I don't know why.
Did they put any...
No.
Your hair?
I was in character. I got old for the character.
Did they grade your hair up? They grade your hair up a little. No,
that's my natural. My hair is a little gray.
Okay.
How did you come about getting into the death metal scene?
Yeah, there's a lot
what spurred your interest in that?
That's why I went back to Egypt. There's a lot of shit going on out there.
All right, so I was, when I was a teenager, I was, just like any teenagers, I was pretty angry, just pissed at.
I went the punk rock route, so I totally.
Yeah, agree. The punk rock is also angry in a way.
Yeah, rancid. All that. Yeah, it was great.
But. So, because Egypt is not an easy country to live in. In comparison to America, it's a third world country. There's a lot of things that are not there, and it's not an easy life. And there is corruption, politically, and so I was really angry at a lot of things, and there was a lot of censorship on art overall. So all the music that I grew up listening to had to be either just about love or forlorn or sadness. It wasn't nobody could say anything political in their music or whatever. So when I was a teenager, I was introduced to heavy metal through a friend of mine's brother, older brother, and I was like, oh, these guys talk about sex and they talk about drugs and they talk about anti-government shit, and I was like, you can actually do that, so I got really attracted to the ability to be able to express that, it's one of these things where you just obsess about it enough to you meet people that are in the same mindset that want to do that, and so I met some musicians that wanted to form a heavy metal band, and we started.
They weren't Egyptian. Egyptian.
They were all Egyptian, and there wasn't anything like that at the time. But we just got started, and then eventually it became a scene where there was other bands, and we were able to pull off that concert, which was in a small stadium. It was a volleyball type stadium.
Now, because there was censorship on art, did you ever get any pushback for trying to create the scene?
Not initially, because most of the government people don't understand English, so it wasn't.
You guys were writing and singing in English.
Yeah, totally. So we kind of got away with it for a while. And actually, it wasn't the government pushback; it was more the fundamentalist pushback, the religious fanatics that started to say, "We don't want this scene. These guys are Satanists. These guys are Americanized, whatever." And they started to push back basically threatened the government that if you don't stop these guys, we're gonna start to blow up concerts and so the government started arresting heavy metal kids and shaving their heads and shaking them up.
What were you 17?
I was 20, 21. Okay. Yeah, at that time.
And what are you now? You're in your 40s.
Is 40. The scene still alive?
The scene is still alive, yeah. I mean, they're...
So you're the granddaddy of the dark metal scene.
Is there, a big poster of you?
I don't know if there's a poster, but we started it in 93. It was it was us and other four bands were kind of the pioneers of heavy metal.
You guys still get airplay out there on radio or anything that?
I don't know. I'm not there, so I'm not really following the scene over there.
Were you scared to be killed?
Because you're an artist, you're just trying to express yourself, mm-hmm. and then you get threats that people are gonna blow up a concert. You're is it worth it? It was pretty scary, and these guys don't mess around. They do blow up shit.
Sure.
It was a scary time, and we kind of stopped playing because of the government were arresting people and stuff. So it kind of stopped for a while, and then I moved here.
Do you go back?
I go back. Yeah, I was, but my family's there, so I go back to visit my family. That's the only reason, really, I go back. So I was back in September.
Excellent. So, are you married now?
I am married, yes.
For how long?
I've been married for about 5.5 years.
Egyptian woman? Or?
No, American.
Yeah, okay. So is in your culture, is the arranged marriage, is that something? Or
arranged marriages still exist, yeah. But I mean, my family has been, they're unique in the sense that they've been supportive of me overall, even when they didn't understand what the fuck heavy metal was.
right.
They just didn't get it, you know, but
that's more credit.
Yeah.
Right.
But they didn't try to stop me, you know, so they've always been supportive and understanding, you know, so they never tried to like manipulate me or guilt me into doing something that I didn't want. And they love my wife. They
well, this story is very interesting. Have you written an idea for like a film for this or anything?
For like the my life, not really. But I wrote the short film that I'm working on producing right now because I was visiting my family with my wife at the time the Arab Spring happened. Mm-hmm. We were there the week before and it kicked in, and we were there for the first week of it when mm-hmm. like shit was hitting the fan. So I was really shaken by that experience. And then, you know, when I came here, I was like, I need to write something about that. Mm-hmm. And
did
I wrote
it affect like the travel, like where you?
Yeah, we couldn't leave.
That's unbelievable. I was glued. I was glued to the news when that was going on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was. I thought, you know, because it was crazy, and I was like, okay, maybe we'll just go to the airport, try to maybe upgrade to business class and like get the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm not the only brilliant one with that idea.
Yeah.
I was like uber smart of, right. You know, like everyone and their mother went to the airport to upgrade to business.
Right.
And there was curfew and there wasn't enough planes and we almost got like trampled in the airport. It was like a fucking Judgment Day scene, man. It was so scary. And then we had to be evacuated by the American embassy, actually, to Cyprus.
It's kind of like...
To Turkey, sorry.
Did you ever see the TV show Tyrant? It's kind of like Tyrant when they're trying to get out of there.
Yeah,
and
pretty much, yeah. That was... It was it was a lot less glamorous than Tyrant.
Right,
but it had that...
Of course.
Yeah, but it had, like, yeah, Tyrant, everybody's wearing, like, dapper suits and, like, old...
Right.
Yeah, no, it was... Yeah. It was pretty intense.
Wow. So would you ever like because you know I'm Italian, Irish. My wife is Latina. She's Costa Rican, and she's always like, "Hey, we'll retire in Costa Rica or Italy or you know." Would you go back and you know retire there in Egypt?
In Egypt, I don't know if I would retire there, but I would maybe buy property like either by the Mediterranean or by the Red Sea, and just like go there every once in a while. But I don't know if I think of retiring there. I'm actually, the more ideal situation is to be able to bring my family here and relieve them of the stress that is living in
like
Egypt.
Like your parents?
Yeah, my parents and yeah.
And you have brothers?
And I have a
younger
sister and a younger brother that I would love to be able to bring them here.
So you're out here, you come from Chicago. And were you SAG in the Screen Actors Guild when you were in Chicago?
I was AFTRA back in the day when AFTRA was
when could
separate.
Join.
Yeah.
Chad did that, like, and then you rolled the dice, and then they became SAG.
Right.
Oh, man, maybe it'll become SAG, even though they've said it for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And then it finally did.
And it finally happened.
Yeah, it was like every year.
You every wait 3 years, it happens.
Yeah.
So,
I became AFTRA before moving here, and then I became SAG later.
So this audition for like American Sniper was Clint there for like the callback, or was this like on tape? You like with the producers, like you know. Like,
it was on tape with casting. He doesn't attend auditions, and there was no callbacks. It was just one time.
Yeah.
On tape. Then he makes his selection, and then I got the call 3 months later.
Right.
Yeah. So it was a super awesome call to get.
Right. How's Clint on set? He's getting up there. Is he 100% up? That chair gig at the Republican convention was a little.
Yeah.
He's 85.
He's still fucking.
Yeah, you can't tell.
He's still fucking.
Does he have a wife that's like 60 or 50 or something?
He's got
some hot wife
now. He had a crazy other wife. This guy's still fucking. Yeah, I'm going to fuck.
He's pretty you know, I mean, like, you can't tell his age. I've seen 85.
Is he very coherent?
Absolutely, man. And I've seen 85 where, like, they have the head pieces and the walkers and shit. No, he's like, I would give him like maybe 50, like, if I would have to age him.
Mentally,
yeah. He's very sharp.
Yeah, because looking at him, he's not.
Yeah, he's very sharp. He's very, like, physically.
He comes right over to you. Hey, Hyman, let's do the scene like this. I mean, was he given direction?
I got directions once from him on the set. But otherwise, he's an actor's director.
Right.
You know, he just lets the actors do their thing. He made sure that he selected the right people and then lets them do
that. Was he talking with Bradley Cooper a lot?
A lot, yeah.
So he was really like, hey, Brad, boom. I mean,
yeah.
The first AD wasn't coming over to him. It was always...
Bradley's also a producer in the film.
Right.
So I think Bradley was initiating a lot of conversations before each scene with him. I don't know if that's Clint's style or if that's just Bradley wanting to hammer it out beforehand. But there was a lot of conversations with them before each scene.
Oh, awesome. So it was a great experience.
It was very surreal, man. I still don't believe that it happened. You know?
Right.
it's like,
and people are noticing you. I mean, you're getting noticed all around, right? Hey, you're the good bad guy.
Yeah, I was fortunate, man, because the character I got to play wasn't straight up... terrorist, you know, wasn't straight up like shoot 'em up kind of guy. So it was very cool to play for me as an actor. It had a lot of depth to it, and it's been a really great ride.
You know, there's a line in American Sniper. I'm not gonna say what it is, but Eddie had written this line in Target Jeremy.
Are you serious?
Eddie Velez, yeah, and it's in the fucking movie. Uh-huh. So we've taken the fucking line out from this actor.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like
crazy.
It's like upsetting.
Yeah,
and he's like, "What the fuck?" I mean, like, he's pissed about it.
Yeah, but in a way, that's kind of like that's the they're
of
both
course.
Truthful.
Of
like
course.
they hone the truth of a situation down. That's pretty awesome.
Well, I, you know, we wish you could have did the film. I mean, we have so much more. We just did this pilot, which is getting rave reviews, my pilot and stuff.
Is Eddie directed that as well? That's
awesome. I was going to direct it with him, and then I just decided I was the star of it.
Yeah.
And I wrote it, and I'm producing it too. I'm like,
you don't want to be that guy.
I don't want to be the fucking Woody Allen. And, you know, I mean, because here's the thing, Woody Allen's great, but if you see him in Fading Gigolo, that's the best I think he's ever been.
I love that movie. I just watched it recently. Yeah. That was a great movie. And I loved Turo too.
Well, the first film I ever did, I was in, I always get this wrong, The Cradle of Rock, not The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, with me and Totoro. That was the first film. I mean, you could see me, but my thing is actually, my lines are cut.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm right there. I'm literally, it's me and him walking and talking the whole, this thing. That was about acting with the theater and stuff, if you remember, with Paul Giamatti, if you remember that movie.
Yeah.
And so me and Totoro were hanging, and we talked about fame. You know, when we would eat together, and he was just like, I just want to be able to just do the craft and then go to any restaurant and not be bothered. You know, and that's how he had always lived his career.
Yeah.
And then he did Mr. Deeds, and then it was done. Like, he's the fucking, I bet he's sneaky. I mean, like, he's so, and then Brother, Where Art Thou?
Anger management too.
Oh, anger management. I mean, once
fucking Grenada.
He has so many great stuff before that too.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
And Jesus the Lebowski. Jesus.
Yeah. Oh
yeah. Yeah, he's. He's just such a nice guy. You know? And his whole family. Like Nikki. You know, Nick Turturro, his brother, and Ida Turturro. I think she's the cousin.
Yeah.
You know, she's from Sopranos. She played Tony's sister. Anyways, So, are you going up for, I mean, TV, like, shows like Sleeper Cell or all these shows that are like the Middle Eastern homeland? Are you going up for these shows?
I've been going. I mean, that's just, that goes with the, you know, the whole stereotype. That's obvious.
No, of course.
And especially also that I speak the language too. Like, I speak Arabic, so that also.
You speak Farsi?
I don't speak Farsi. Okay. I had to learn a few lines here and there for auditions, but for the most part, just Arabic.
Right.
So that goes with the territory. That's, you know, you get stereotyped, which is fine.
Of course, I go for the Italian.
Yeah. It's part of the job, you know. But lately, I've been actually getting stuff outside of the ethnicity. Like, I did a Pretty Little Liars. I played a lie detector examiner. Where
that was
I wasn't anybody. Like,
yeah, there's
I was just
no racial thing.
No accent. Right. So that was good. And I've been getting actually more comedy auditions now.
Have you taken any sitcom classes? Do you feel very strong as a comedic actor?
I took Leslie Kahn's class, which is amazing.
She has the best class. I never took her class. I was in this amazing acting class, and the girl's like one of Leslie Kahn's stars. Her name is Elizabeth Bond.
Uh-huh.
And she, I don't know what it was, but for that year, he would like just make me do scenes with her. For every sitcom thing, we would just do scenes.
Yeah.
So she taught me the fucking pace and everything. So I'm real good with the, you know, sitcom now. But I wasn't. I was never, like, some people, like, will see me and they'll go, oh, you're such a natural, you're so good, da, da, da. But it fucking was a hard road, man.
Yeah.
I worked so hard in so many classes, you know, a good 20 different classes.
Comedy is not easy, man, as you know. I think as a stand-up comic, and that's what I'm what I'm learning now from doing stand-up comedy, is that it really puts you at an edge as for sitcoms, because you understand the beats, you understand the rhythm of the comedy, you understand the threes and all that, and you know the pauses. Like it gives you that power over anybody that just took a sitcom class, you know.
Have you taken improv classes as well?
I've taken improv in Chicago, and which is like the origin of it all. And you did
Second City?
I did Second City there, and I've taken some improv classes here. But for the most part,
how'd you like Second City? I've heard mixed reviews. I'm doing improv now. I've been talking to people, and I hear mixed reviews on Second City.
In Chicago, it's actually very good. They're very good. And I took improv for actors, which is slightly different. I like it. I like it. It was a good experience for me. Here, I don't know. You know. Here is like, here you have the Groundlings also, which is not there in Chicago, and you have the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is also, I hear great things about. So
how are you with your stand-up? Are you digging pretty deep? Are you talking about some situations in Egypt when you were a kid and making it funny?
Yes, I'm I haven't gotten into the kid stuff yet, but I'm talking about a lot of stuff that you used to piss me off about, the contradiction, like the contradictory stuff, and about like how women are treated there, and how people you know, put up a religious front, but on the inside they're, you know, they're acting a different way, which is, you know, it's kind of international, but most of my comedy is about my experience as an Egyptian. I also try to point out some of the American contradictions into it too, so that people can relate to it. I, as a stand-up comic, it's kind of a journey within. The more you do it, the more you like dig deep inside and like get those, like, it's like therapy.
Are you learning, like, is your comedic voice coming together a lot more than it was 6 months ago?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like anything else, you know, acting, any art form, the more you do it, the more you hone your skills. And the more you understand, like, I, you know, now I understand that it's not just about going up there and filling the time and telling the jokes. It's more about connecting with the audience and, like, letting things rest. And which initially I just used to go and I'm like, I have 5 minutes. I have to do, like, a certain amount of jokes and da-da-da, you know, without waiting for the people to absorb that. So it's been a really awesome journey, and it really affected my acting, too.
Oh, yeah. Has American Sniper, has that helped you with, like, these little, as I call them, little clown bookers, you know, that, like, they're like, hey, do my show, like...
Yeah, okay. It has been, yeah.
So you're getting, because I remember you posting, and you're like, oh, I'm doing the show, and I'm like, oh, is that your show, or are you on someone's show? Like, I couldn't understand.
I don't have enough material to do my own show yet, so I mostly like just go on people's shows to, you know, to play.
And are you getting out like 3 times a week at least?
I try, but because my and you know, it's stand-up comedy. I'm like, the more I do it, the more I learn. It's a lifestyle. Like, you have to dedicate a lot of time to it.
Yeah, man.
Since my priority is acting, I tend to put a lot more time into acting, so I don't go out as much as I'd love to. But yeah, 3 days a week would be ideal. But I've really been averaging like a couple times a month.
Does your wife support you?
Absolutely, yeah. She's non-conditional
does
support.
She work? Does she work?
She's a writer and illustrator, and she also does production design, and so she's an artist. And
do you work another job as well?
I do. Survival. Sometimes, yeah, I do. Well, I do voiceover gigs, and I do web design sometimes. It depends, you know. But yeah, for the most part, you do. It's like a freelance style, so you do whatever you need to do to fill in here and there.
Do you have a website?
I have a website.
No, but I do web design.
yeah, right. Yeah, I do it for others.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a website. It's imansaman.com.
So it's imansaman.
Yes.
Okay. .com.
Yeah.
You guys go check him out on that. Is there a Facebook, Twitter, anything like
that? There's Facebook, imansaman, actor imansaman, and Twitter, imanation. It's imanation. I also have a YouTube channel that we do comedy sketches. It's called the ADD channel.
Oh, okay.
And we do...
what's it called?
The ADD. What? Yeah, so it's exactly
right.
And our motto is we focus on distractions.
Right.
So it's like 3-4 minute videos, and we play with our friends or actors.
So do you have a bunch of buddies that you kind of like camaraderie? You're getting together, like you're like, hey, let's do a writing session this week, and you're
recently we're developing an actually a core team where we write and shoot things together. Before, we would just extend to whoever we know as actors, and we play with them. But now it's getting more solidified.
As a little boy in Egypt, did you see yourself going into the acting field? Like, oh, I want to do that, or like, I mean, you know, not to be ignorant, would it be like an Omar Sharif or something?
Yeah.
Like, that's, I mean, was that a guy actually, that you're like, oh my God?
That's actually very insightful. That's not ignorant
at
all.
Wow.
Because I was, because I did look up to Omar Sharif.
Right.
And because for me, like, Omar Sharif was this guy that, he's Egyptian, you know, and he made it internationally. I always wanted to do the same to other kids in Egypt to inspire them to be like that Egyptian kid who was, I was like them, I was playing in the dirt and soccer, and now I can, you know, I made my dream happen, and I want to be that to a lot of other kids there that are desperate, you know?
Right. So, as we say in America, like low class, middle class, high class, is there that same in Egypt?
To an extent, yeah, it's,
like, what
it's
were you?
Similar. Probably like a middle class, lower middle class.
Like, what'd your father do?
My dad was a lawyer. He worked for the government. He was a government lawyer. And my mom was an HR manager in a hospital.
Okay.
So we were definitely. I lived a nice life. Like I didn't starve for a meal or anything like that. I went to school and to college. So overall, it was a nice life. I'm grateful for. But in comparison to America, I would say probably like if you compare it, it probably be a poor family here.
Right.
In terms of yeah, comparison.
Yeah, I have never gone to Egypt. I know me and my wife, we travel all over the country.
Yeah.
And she's very scared to go there.
I can't blame her because the news, you know, always blows thing up out of proportion.
Really want to go.
You can still. Honestly, you could still go. It's not as bad as Compton.
Can you guarantee me?
I can't guarantee you, but I mean, it's like.
Can you sign a waiver?
Like you can go to the safest country in the world, and maybe something bad happens. You could get mugged or whatever. Obviously, because this is a hot area and there's all this news.
Right.
But you could still go and you'll be fine. You know, there's still tour groups that go there and it's not that bad.
It's just amazing how fear-mongering affects people's outlook on just regional areas.
Yeah.
I've been to Compton before.
Yeah,
There's like a little part that's really bad. But for the most part, Compton's not that bad.
I love Compton during the day.
Yeah, I'm not going.
Seriously, I mean, the other day I got lost. And you just know that it doesn't matter where you're at. Doesn't matter where you're at. I got lost. The GPS for some reason was not reading. And I just see high streets, like 122. And I'm like, this is bad. This is bad. Yeah. Like the higher the streets go, the worse. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm fine. And you know, it's like when it's hot, you know, it's hot out and you're like, and you just see people walking around, and you're like, this is a shady situation. And then you see so many movies and then you're like, all right, well, let me keep a little bit of distance between this car in case they jump out.
Yeah.
And at the red light, if I could drive on the sidewalk here, I'm good.
I've lived in Philly, Baltimore, been in New York, all these different cities. The only place that made me feel uncomfortable with my surroundings was when I got off the wrong exit picking my dad up at Newark Airport once.
Oh, yeah.
Newark is scary.
Newark,
and Bayonne.
Newark is scary as hell.
Yeah.
Well, Newark, to me, would be, like, at least this one part that I was in Newark was like, industrial. Like, there ain't shit going on except for badness. You know, like, you're just like, this is scary.
Oh, this is where evil is.
Yeah, like,
well, that neighboring town,
I got
town,
off at that same exit, I think. Because Chad lived in Hoboken.
Yeah,
so,
my airport. I think it's easiest airport. And then you gotta pass Bayonne, which is, like, I think
that's
one
prison,
of the...
right? The prison's there?
I'm not sure, but it's one of the, like, you know, most criminal activities, I think, murders in in Jersey or maybe even in the country. Bayonne.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Bayonne's Newark, they're
Newark,
right
Newark's
up there. Yeah.
Downtown Newark is, like, it's really bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to even explain it with words.
No, I've gotten booked in some shows over the years when I was in New York and get booked... I remember, like, a comedian, Cool Bubba Ice, he was like, hey, man, come do a show in Newark, And then you see something like on Facebook, you're like, nah, I'm good. You know, like there's like this shootout outside the comedy club. And he's like, oh, he's like, oh yeah, we all killed. No, you all almost got killed. Like it's fucking, yeah, Newark's pretty shady.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things I asked my people. We asked you if you had your website. Do you have a Kickstarter or anything for your short film?
Not yet, but we'll probably have something for it. It's a short movie called Toppled.
Toppled.
It takes place in a vague Middle Eastern country, and it's about the last few minutes of the life of a toppled dictator.
Okay.
So not yet, but we'll
have
something.
Who's playing the dictator?
Maz.
It's gonna be Maz.
Yeah.
Oh, Maz.
Yeah.
Yes, I am. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I worked with him. He's just a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great
guy. I was looking at him, and his face is just so
it's deep.
Fucking, you look and you're like, man, this guy's been through a lot in his fucking life.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at his nose, you know, because I see the editing. So we're looking at his up close, you're going, this guy, man, he's got some deep stuff that has happened to this guy.
He's very funny, too, by the way.
Oh, he's great. Well, you know, so he shows up. He shows up to set, and he's like, you know, we're in the desert, and he's like, so we leave the place, and we're going to film. We got the four tracks, the tanks, and all this stuff, and we're using drones and stuff. And he's like, hey, do you have the script? And I go, oh, yeah, I sent it to you. Oh, yeah, I didn't print. So he doesn't have, like, anything.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, oh, fuck, he doesn't have it. So now I'm, like, a little nervous.
Uh-huh.
I'm, like, a little nervous and annoyed at the same time. Uh-huh. Like, because, like, holy shit, I cast this guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't have his stuff.
Yeah.
And he looks at it for, like, 5-10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And he's got all the lines.
Yeah.
I said, this fucking guy.
He's one of the hardest working actors.
I mean, he's a wonderful person. Yeah. But as a producer, I was nervous, like, holy shit, he's not going to know his lines. And we're in the fucking desert. I mean, we only have so much light. You know what I mean? It's like, he killed it. He was so great. Masiam.
Yeah.
S-I-A-M. Look him up, man. Just an amazing actor.
Fantastic actor.
And he was so funny. He was telling me about that movie, like, Nude Guns with Big Guns. I'm proud of this movie. Nude Guns with Big Guns.
It's like a total exploitation movie.
That's so funny. So is there anybody, so we talked about Omar Sharif, but then when you got here to the United States, Chicago, then LA, And you watch TV. Do you watch a lot of TV, movies? Like, as an actor, my favorite acting teacher was Lewis Smith, who's a famous actor, been in millions of things. He was a big star.
Yeah.
And then he got out of it. And he said, he was like, look, you got to watch for genre. You got to watch for tone.
Absolutely.
So I, like, on-demand everything or, you know, DVR. I watch every TV show. And not that I sit and watch every show. But I watch, I get enough of it to understand. So when I go into these auditions,
Of course,
I'm like, oh, this is the audition. You just throw the lines away. They don't want you to upstar the star.
Yeah, it's your business, man. Yeah. It's your work. You have to keep tabs on what's going on.
I don't study anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Other than watching movies and TV.
Yeah.
I've been to so many classes for so many years. Yeah. And then I, knock on wood, I still work all the time.
Yeah.
So are you in a class now? Because of Leslie
Kahn? Leslie Kahn, I took the classes early on when I moved to LA. Last year I was co-teaching a class, and every once in a while I would do a scene. But I'm not in a class right now. I'm just working, you know? I mean, I think... you have to give yourself some time to work outside of class, because a lot of people fall into the trap of, like, I'm not ready, I'm just going to take more classes, and I have to keep taking classes. Classes are great.
Lifetime students who never work.
Yeah, but you have to kind of, it's kind of like get off the, what is it, the
get off
teat.
The horse, whatever, get off the titty. Yeah,
yeah, and just get your hands dirty and, like, do some shit out there, you know, that's the most learning experience.
Are you doing any theater out here?
I've been doing averaging, like, a one play a year, because theater takes a lot of time, commitment, and a lot of work. It's great, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm not doing theater. I'm just actually doing a lot of the sketch comedy for my YouTube channel. But the last play I did was last year. It was a comedy. And every time I do a play, I book something big for some reason.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, because you know you're practicing.
Yeah.
You're in the motion. What comedians? Because you know, what made you think you could do stand up?
I've always been a jokester in life, and you know, you get people tell you, oh, you should
do stand up
or whatever.
You should do voice
and my wife kept telling me, and And I finally got the courage to do an open mic one day. And I feel like, for me, it's more of the accumulation of everything that I've done. Singing, acting, all the art forms, are voiceover, it's all coming into the stand-up comedy. Because you do all of it.
Right.
And you write, and you direct your... It's like you're a one-man show.
Right.
So for me, it was like, started to make sense. I'm like, yeah, well, that's... Pretty much, I'm using every art form that I know in this one art form.
Who were you looking up to, like, as a comic? Were you like,
I love Eddie Izzard. I always like Eddie Izzard. Yeah, I just enjoy his amazing. His like intellectual. Brilliant yeah, comedian. I love the clever comedians. And of course, you know, the big ones. Like George Carlin and like these guys, but Eddie for some reason was like my inspiration for early, right. And he's a phenomenal actor too.
Oh yeah, The Riches.
Oh, The Riches, yeah.
TV show.
That was a great show. Yeah. Like, yeah, I was so bummed when that got canceled.
Well, did you watch Shameless?
Yeah, the guys from Shameless.
Yeah, Mickey from Shameless. The gay badass. He's from The Riches.
Yeah, he was the son in Riches.
He was, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. I think he's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you tried to push for that? Like I give my agents all the tools. Mm. Like, you were in Chicago, so are you like, look, get me up for Shameless?
Yeah.
Are you telling them?
Yeah. I mean, I do. I also try to like to trust that they're doing what.
But do they know? They've had in-depth talks. They know you were in Chicago. They
yeah.
know you were here.
Yeah. I have a good relationship with them. Oh, okay, you know, before pilot season, we got together for lunch and like to just talk strategy and talk about, you know, what's after American Sniper and things like that. So yeah, I have a good relationship with them.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. So, I was looking at some of your tapes and stuff. Do you feel that you have a pretty good tape now for your stand-up?
For my stand-up, I feel very confident. Yeah, I have a good demo to
And what can you do, show. About 10, 12?
I can do about, like, I think I have enough material to do 20 minutes. I'm shooting for 30 because a friend of mine is challenging me by May to open for him in Vegas.
Who is this?
He's in Arizona. His name is Steve Briscoe. He's not an active comedian. He does, like, you know, he used to be like active comedian in LA, and then
yeah.
I moved to Arizona.
Where's he working in Vegas?
I don't remember the place, but he's headlining
in
a casino.
Week?
I think so. I think that's the gig. But yeah. So he's like, if you can, you know, push yourself to do 30 minutes between now and then,
right.
I'll have you feature for me.
Okay.
So I'm taking on that challenge to push for 30.
So do you have any buddies that you're running around, like other comedians that you're hanging out? Or do you see any comics that you're like, do you go to the Cellar and all that stuff and look?
No, I had a few comedians that we had like a couple of writing sessions, which was really great. Helped me out a lot, but it hasn't been consistent.
Right.
Because of, you know, auditions and
everything. Right,
yeah.
Right.
But it was a great experience. I'd love to have like a group like that where you just work on each
other's
jokes.
Him. I mean, he's you know, he's my very good friend. He's I grabbed him about in 2001 or something like that, and I've taken him all over. He's always on the road. He opens for me. Or my other best friend he's sitting in for my best friend Tim Homiyun, who's Iranian, and he is a headliner as well. But he'll open for me as well. But he's great, you know. He's a New York headliner right now.
Yeah.
But all right, cool. So this, you've plugged some stuff. Is there anything you want to tell the audience? Anything you want to know? A little Egyptian boy is. he's running from his parents right now. He's hiding out, and he wants to look up to you as his Omar Sharif.
He wants to be
in
his head.
So, yeah.
I would say that there is that no dreams are too big. If you really believe in your dream and you just go for it, regardless of the fear will always be there. I still have fear. It doesn't go away, but if you just believe in your dream, strong enough that you'll eventually make it happen. I mean, I like I said, I grew up in the alleys of Cairo, and I never thought I would end up on a Clint Eastwood set, and and it happened. So if it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. I'm not that special.
Secret is real.
The secret is real. I mean, it's
you gotta take with a grain of salt.
That fucking book.
You gotta take it with a grain of salt. But it's real, man. When you speak something into existence. Yeah. And you make it a priority in your life. You make conscious decisions every day to move towards that decision.
Yeah.
It just subconsciously stuff, like, you've aimed your life, so you start heading in that direction.
Absolutely, yeah. People will show up that will help you in that direction. Yeah.
Speaking of the secret, do you masturbate as a married man?
Too much. I guess that's natural. I mean, yeah, it happens.
Very natural, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, was it more before or after marriage?
Yeah.
Was it more before? Yeah, probably it was more before, yeah. Of course.
More before? Okay, yeah. Good. So, you know, I used to do a bit.
We were just talking about believing in dreams.
Yeah, that's why.
You a 2 foot? You a 3 foot?
Yeah. Three times. So is porn something in your life? You look at porn?
These days, not really. I mean, it would when I grew up, like in Egypt, there wasn't really a lot of
access. Was there like an Egyptian porn star? Like,
no, there wasn't Egyptian porn star. The stuff that I had access to, it's funny, the stuff that I had access to when I was a teenager was German porn. And it was like 70s German porn with sideburns and bell bottoms and shit.
Who's that Middle Eastern porn star? She was just in the news.
Yeah, she was just Facebook and all that.
Yeah, she's really big on like Twitter and stuff, and she's been like blowing up, and she's been getting apparently like
a lot of controversy.
Like, I think
rats and stuff.
I think some like terrorist organization or something like reached out to her on Twitter and said they were gonna like kill her, and she was whatever.
I've seen stuff in the news feed about that.
So what?
But now I get turned on by German.
Now you like the German?
I get a hard on every time I hear somebody.
Every
speaking
time.
Every time a BMW goes by.
Every time
German metal porn.
Every time
I'm watching
a
Nazi movie.
Yeah, the producers. You watch the producers. Yeah. You fucking get hard. Mel Brooks. So what would your porn name be if you had one?
That's a good question.
The last one was weak. Sad and Lonely was weak.
I liked it.
You liked Sad and Lonely.
Yeah, that's a Nazi Malak. Is Sad and Lonely.
Sad and Lonely.
Just because you hate him.
I like him. We squashed the beef. He's a good guy.
If you squashed it, you wouldn't have just said his poor name was
Sad and Lonely. Okay, can I ask you, Chad? If you would you watch a porn star named Sad and Lonely?
Only if I was sad and lonely.
Yeah.
But, all right. Okay. It's a different demographic.
See, I don't think it's a problem.
No. I wouldn't pick it off the shelf like, you know, when you're shopping in the back of the old
Mandingo,
rental ones. Yeah.
Ron Jeremy. Ooh, Sad and Lonely.
It's not something I would Google. Like,
well,
Sad and Lonely,
okay,
bitches.
Look,
Egyptian
listen,
Sad and Lonely.
Listen, have we ever... I know I'm not the only guy who's looked at... Like, you're saying you wouldn't with the Sad and Lonely? I know I've looked at, like... porn, and like I'm online and I look and I'm like, and it's like ugly girl with big tits. You're like, yeah, let me jerk off to her because she's got this ugly face. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to just jerk off all over your face. Like, your ugly face turns me on for that fucking 10 minutes. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
you've won me over on Saturday.
It's not, it's a fetish that now. People are going to get into the Sad and Lonely fucking porn.
He'll get the sympathy
it's
of
a new
women.
Fetish.
Is that what you're saying?
50 Shades of Sad and Lonely.
Well, it's funny because my buddy actually directs porn for Vivid, and he's a famous drummer from Skid Row.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his name is Phil Verone.
Huh?
Yeah, he was the second drummer on their their big tour, and then he was the second. That they got rid of the one guy, and now he directs porn now.
Huh?
And he was a stand-up for a while.
Wow!
And
he whispered at the third.
Yeah, time. No, but he's a great guy. So I'm gonna tell him about the Sad and Lonely. I think this could be a fetish that nobody knows about. See,
run
this
with
is
it,
great.
Man. Run with it. So the secret, declare it right now.
But I want to know what your porn name.
I would
be.
Say since you know because of how I look, I'm like ambiguous. And I would say Tony Dice.
Tony Dice.
Yeah. or Tony.
Now that's a name. Tony's that is a name.
Why dice?
You just roll the dice. You roll the dice. Yeah, you never know. That's great.
That's great.
The girl doesn't know who's coming in. Yeah, it's awesome. Tony Dice. Dice. Jackpot.
Are you
you throw dice through the door every time right. you walk in the room.
So are you 7 or 11?
That's nice.
Well, there was a recent like.
Or are you 3 crabs?
There was a double downs.
That's blackjack.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not a gambler.
You have to have a little knowledge if you want to be Tony Dice.
Yeah. Okay. I'll work on it. I'll do some homework.
Tony Blackjack.
Some homework.
Okay, so Tony Dice.
Good. Yeah.
So I haven't heard you swear much. I swear. We all swear.
Yeah.
It's just part of my upbringing. I want to hear you swear. What's your favorite swear word? Uh-huh. And you can do it as Tony Dice if you want.
Okay, it's an Arabic swear. Is that cool?
Ooh,
I'll
yeah,
I'll teach you.
Sure.
I'll teach you an Arabic
kids,
swear.
Gather around.
It's my favorite Arabic swear. It's Yabn al Sharmuta.
You have to run that back.
Yabn al Sharmuta, and it means you son of a dirty rag. and the rag, like, also the rag is also, it could be that, because, like, back in the day, women used to use a rag
for
their
vagina.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's kind of that. So that's my favorite.
And your father used to say this to who?
My dad actually is very religious. He didn't actually swear that much. And he'd never, I never heard him using that word. He would just say, Yabn al Kalb, which is like son of a dog.
Okay.
Which is kind of like equivalent of son of a bitch here, sort of. Right. But it's a more polite, you know. And it's like, it refers to him, it doesn't insult like my mom or anything.
Is there a word for the C word?
Yeah, kus. They say kusomak. Kusomak is like your mom's pussy.
Okay, I'm
off. So, which is like, literally, it's not really an insult. It's like, you know, your mom's face or your mom's
right.
nose, but because of the sensitivity of that organ, it's an insult. So, you're like,
so
you
do,
say your mom's
do your mama, your mama's so fat in Egypt.
Sorry
for joke.
And
you do it, say it in Egypt, and then say it in American, and then we're done.
Okay, so. أمك تخينا موت بيفتكروها الأهرام. It's your mom is so fat they think her ass is a pyramid.
You just said that to me. Thanks a lot. Thank you so much,
man. Thanks,
man. You've been great.
Thanks
Woody, say
me.
Goodbye, Chad.
Take care, man.
Good
awesome.
Evening. Thank you. Thank
Check
you.
Out the podcast at brooklynbuddha.com. Go to funnyjimmy.com, jimmydelavalley.com for stand-up comedy dates, all that. ChadShapiro.com. Woody doesn't have a website. Maybe I'm in a old fucking designer one.
Can I help you?
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
Stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.